So what about food sources, right? We can learn a little bit more, maybe. Is this consistent with, I thought meats cause heart disease and dairy causes heart disease, right? So what if we look at studies of food sources? Will that give us some insights? Well, we went to do this a couple of years ago, and we saw that there is actually no good evidence on meat intake and heart disease. I mean, this has been a pillar of recommendations for, again, 30, 40 years to reduce meat intake and eat lean meats to reduce heart disease risk. And we sort of started looking for the evidence, and we're shocked that there were mixed cohort studies, you know, not really any good studies. So we did a systematic review and meta-analysis, again, led by Dr. Misha, who just published a saturated fat review. What we found is, and so the first thing we did is we saw that some studies looked at unprocessed red meat like steak and hamburger. Some studies looked at processed meat like sausage and deli meats and other things. Some studies looked at total meat, and they didn't really differentiate them. So we contacted all of the authors and asked them to give us the original or new analyses for unprocessed meats, for processed meats, and for total meats. And many of them actually complied and gave us the data. So we were able to do a meta-analysis. So this is looking at meat intake and unprocessed red meat intake and risk of coronary heart disease. And so there were four prospective cohorts that we could get data from. And we found that unprocessed red meats, the relative risk was 1.0 for high versus low. This isn't for high versus low. This is for a serving per day. But for a serving per day of red meats, absolutely no relationship with heart disease. When we looked at processed meats, 42% higher risk of heart disease for processed meat intake for one serving per day. And we looked in NHANES, the U.S. Survey of Nutrition, to see what's the difference between unprocessed red meats and processed meats in the U.S. Is it fats? Is it saturated fat? Is it cholesterol? And what we found actually was that total fat content is actually a little bit higher in processed meats, but saturated fat's about the same, dietary cholesterol is about the same, heme iron's about the same. Right? There were actually two key differences between processed meats and unprocessed meats. What were the two key differences we saw? Sodium was 6 times higher in processed meats, 6 times, 600%. And nitrates and nitrites were about 50% higher. Preservatives, right? That's what defines a processed meat, is preservative. So this, to me, actually fully supports, is fully consistent with everything we've seen, that saturated fat is probably not much of a risk factor. And actually, studies that have looked at animal fats and heart disease and sort of big ecologic studies, they're probably, a lot of those people are eating processed meats, and they are at higher risk, but it's probably not from the meat. It's probably from the processing of the meat. And this is actually a really, this is a new study. It's a meta-analysis. This should be confirmed in more studies. But if this is true, it actually has profound implications, because what have we been doing for 20 or 30 years? We've been sending, spouses and parents have been sending their loved ones, out for lunch with, low-fat processed turkey meat or low-fat processed chicken, thinking it's a healthy choice, right? When maybe actually we've been causing harm or at least no benefit. So this is what we found for heart disease. And we actually found the same thing for diabetes. I didn't show those results, but we found the same thing for diabetes, that unprocessed meat was not associated with diabetes intake, and processed meat was. Well, the other major source of saturated fat in the diet is milk and dairy. And so this is a summary of four different meta-analyses of dairy intake and risk of CHD, stroke, or diabetes. So the first one, the it's kind of small, but hopefully you can see it on your sheet. The first meta-analysis is for total heart disease, 11 prospective cohort studies, the highest versus lowest intake of dairy. The next one, again, is total heart disease, a different meta-analysis, 8 prospective cohorts, total stroke, 7 prospective cohorts, diabetes, 4 prospective cohorts, and for milk or dairy consumption. And you can see, actually, the highest versus the lowest category, there's actually, for some outcomes like stroke and diabetes, there's actually benefit observed. People who eat more dairy actually have lower risk of stroke and diabetes. And for heart disease, there's trends towards benefit that aren't statistically significant. But there's certainly no evidence for harm from eating dairy. And in these, not all of these cohorts separated out high fat versus or whole fat versus low fat dairy, but the ones that did, the results were very mixed. So some of them, whole fat seemed to actually be the protective one. Some of them, low fat seemed to be a protective one. Some of them, they seem to be the same. These are observational studies. There's never been a long-term trial of dairy intake in events. So all we have is the observational studies. But again, this actually fully supports the absence of saturated fat having a major impact on cardiovascular disease risk or diabetes or stroke, and actually supports that there's probably other things in dairy that may be good for us. So I just want to end with touching on health effects of specific isomers, because I know there's interest in that by others in the room in terms of palm oil or coconut oil or other sources of saturated fat. What can we say about health effects of specific isomers? Well, let's go back through the exercise again and start with biomarkers and see what we would conclude based on biomarkers. And again, this is a meta-analysis of all of the randomized trials that had been performed when this was done in 2003 of different dietary interventions and effects on cholesterol levels in humans. And based on this, this is 12-0, 14-0, 16, and 18. This is the change in LDL cholesterol versus carbohydrate. All of these are versus carbohydrate. And based on this, right, 12, 14, and 16 are called the cholesterol-raising saturated fatty acids in the new dietary guidelines advisory committee report. And 18 is called neutral because of its effect on LDL cholesterol. Right? This is why stearic acid has been sort of singled out, because of its effect on LDL cholesterol. Well, I hope, based on everything I've shown you, you're not going to start making policy decisions or dietary recommendations based on LDL, right? This is a bad idea. So what about the other cholesterol fractions? Well, if we look at HDL, right, the good cholesterol, then actually everything's totally reversed. 18-0 is the worst. 18-0 versus carb has almost no effect on HDL cholesterol. 12-0 and 14-0 are great for HDL cholesterol. And what are those high in?
Coconut oil.
Coconut oil and what else? Palm kernel oil, right? And dairy, right? And dairy. And dairy, I showed you, is associated with lower risk of diabetes. Diabetics are at risk from low HDL. This is the best saturated fats for raising HDL. It's interesting. Am I going to make conclusions on this? No, it's just HDL. It's all it is. It's a concentration of a circulating substance in the blood. It doesn't tell me anything clinical. But it's very interesting, actually. I would say 12-0 is the best, not 18-0. And what if I look at the ratio? If I look at the ratio, you know, again, 16-0 seems neutral. That is true. Maybe it is neutral compared to carb. But the other fatty acids, actually, 12-0 seems the best, and 18-0 seems good if you look at the ratio of total cholesterol HDL compared to carb going down. But as I've hopefully pointed out, we don't want to draw conclusions based on just blood cholesterol levels, so we need something else to go on. And if we wanted to do it on blood cholesterol levels, what would we pick? Would we pick LDL? Would you pick HDL? Would you pick the ratio? I don't know. So what about other non-lipid risk factors? Well, actually, there's very little human evidence. There's actually almost no human evidence. There's been a little bit that's been done for insulin resistance, a couple studies here and there, but we really need more evidence for non-lipid risk factors. What about heart disease outcomes? What about a prospective cohort study or a randomized trial of actually disease outcomes? Almost no human evidence. What about any other disease outcomes? Stroke, diabetes, any other disease outcomes? Almost no human evidence. So really, I don't think we can draw any conclusions about individual saturated fatty acid isomers in sort of my world of the way I think about evidence, because I don't think I can take LDL cholesterol and leap to a conclusion from that. I've seen that that's actually gotten us into trouble in the past. So to summarize, you know, how do we put all of this together? You know, I didn't talk about other fats because of time, but I think that there's strong and consistent evidence that for cardiovascular disease, this is benefit and harm for cardiovascular health. There's, you know, consistent evidence that seafood omega-3s are very important for cardiovascular health, so I sort of put those at the top. I think plant omega-3s, there's some evidence that's compelling, but if you kind of pool the evidence in meta-analyses, it's not statistically significant. Dr. Brower has done a nice meta-analysis of that. It's interesting, it's hopeful, but we still need more work. So I would say likely, but needs more study. Plant omega-6, you know, when I showed you PUFA, right, that's almost all omega-6 LA. And so certainly there's good evidence that plant omega-6 is beneficial as a replacement for saturated fat, but also as a replacement for carbs. So basically, eat PUFA. It doesn't really matter what you seem to replace it with. Monounsaturated fat, you know, I don't know where to put it. And the reason for this is it does seem like if you look at cohort studies, if you look at total monos is associated with neither higher nor lower risk of heart disease. So if you look at total monos in populations, it's not associated with risk. If you stratify by whether it's monos from animal sources or monos from vegetable sources, then monos from vegetable sources are very consistently associated with benefit, like olive oil, canola oil, and so forth. So it does seem like there's at least different associations with disease of animal versus vegetable sources. But the molecule is the exact same molecule. It's oleic acid. Right, so that tells me that it's probably not oleic acid that's the active constituent in any of those findings. It's probably other things in the vegetable oils. And you know, there's actually, again, very nice emerging evidence for polyphenols, oleocanthin, anti-inflammatory molecules in extra virgin olive oil. And there's certainly other bioactive compounds in canola oil and other vegetable oils. So I think probably vegetable oils that have mono are probably good for you, but I don't know that it's the mono that's good for you. Or maybe when those things are combined with the mono, then the mono is good for you. But maybe when they're taken out, maybe the mono doesn't have much benefit. So I think this is interesting, but sort of, you know, I sort of put it a little bit lower, and I'm not sure how strong to draw conclusions. Saturated fat I put right in the middle, right? Compared to the average background diet, it doesn't seem to be any better or worse than the average background diet. I'm not saying saturated fat's good for you, right? Please don't leave the hall saying the Dr. Mazafarian said saturated fat is good for you. That's not what the evidence shows. It just shows that it's not really anything. It's not good, it's not bad. And so as kind of a pillar of dietary recommendations, as a pillar of the food label, it's not very helpful because it's sort of neutral. It's just sort of sitting in the background environment. What's worse than saturated fat? Well, and as I said, there's unanswered questions of the different fatty acid isomers. There may very well be different effects, but I just don't think we have enough evidence to make any conclusions. I think refined carbohydrates and starches, there's good, compelling evidence from cohort studies, from trials in humans, that refined carbohydrates and starches, which is about 45% of the U.S. diet, right, are harmful. This is where all the action needs to be. And this is not just sugars, but it's all refined carbohydrates. And then at the very bottom, I would put industrially produced trans fat because, you know, the consistency of the evidence from biomarkers to events in prospective cohort studies all show a significant harm. And so if we, you know, try to get a sense of how important these different dietary risk factors are, this is an analysis that I took part in, sort of looking in a comparable way at all major modifiable risk factors for death. And so this is all U.S. deaths. These are thousands of deaths, annual deaths in the United States, and they're divided by the impact on cardiovascular deaths in black, cancer deaths in stripes, and respiratory deaths in blue. Smoking is, of course, no surprise, the number one cause of death in the United States, equally divided between lung deaths, cancer deaths, and heart disease deaths. High blood pressure, obesity are number two and number three, but of course, a lot of these are caused by dietary factors, and that's not accounted for in this type of analysis. This is not high blood pressure independent of its causes. This is high blood pressure from all of its causes. What's new about this analysis is we actually looked at dietary factors. And the top three dietary factors in terms of impact were high sodium, low omega-3s, and high dietary trans fatty acids, all causing about 100,000 excess deaths each, cardiovascular deaths each year in the United States. And it was about the same magnitude as high LDL cholesterol and high blood glucose for cardiovascular disease deaths. So we put a lot of focus on these, right, in our policy and in our healthcare system, right? We don't put hardly any focus on these outside of the people like you in this room. We put very little focus on these, but there are huge causes of death in the United States based on this analysis. Low intake of fruits and vegetables was about the same, equally divided between cancer and cardiovascular disease. And here was polys. So I do think polys are important. This is the estimate of taking 5% energy of saturated fat out and replacing it with polys. So I told you that's important, and it does have an effect. If we take polys, increase our polys in our diet, it is important, but it's a pretty small effect, right? It's about, as I said, about 10% lower risk. So it's not unimportant, but it's smaller than the other dietary factors. So I think that this sort of brings me to kind of my conclusion, which is in the end, everything I just told you is actually not important because, you know, you can't tell a patient to eat X percent of calories from saturated fat. You have to tell them to eat food, right? How many people in this room who have not done an FFQ in the last year know their percent calories from saturated fat, right? Not many, right? Even expert dietitians. What was your percent calories from saturated fat yesterday? Right? You don't know, right? And so how do you expect a patient to know that information? So I think that you know, I've shown you that just looking at a label and saying, oh, it has X, you know, grams of saturated fat, that's not going to be helpful. If it's nuts, that food's actually good for you. If it's fat-free, you know, turkey hot dogs, that food's actually probably bad for you. So focusing on nutrients, individual nutrients for chronic disease prevention, I think is a big mistake. And I think we need to shift our whole policy for chronic disease away from a nutrient-based approach, which was really developed for preventing deficiency, right? We developed this nutrient-based approach in the 1920s to 1950s to prevent deficiency. That's all it was for, is to prevent pellagra, it was to prevent rickets, it was to prevent a night blindness. That's why we did it. It doesn't work for chronic disease. You can't pick out individual nutrients. Maybe trans fat and salt and omega-3s are exceptions. But other than those exceptions, I don't think you can pick out individual nutrients. We really have to focus on foods. So people should eat lots of fruits and vegetables, 10 servings a day of fruits and vegetables combined, fish, 2 servings per week, vegetable oils, nuts, and whole grains. And then it actually doesn't matter what your total percent calories from fat are, your percent calories from saturated fat are, because you're eating an overall healthy diet. And I think that's really sort of the second take-home message. And so, you know, how are we doing in the United States? How are we doing in terms of meeting sort of U.S. dietary guidelines? These are just U.S. dietary guidelines. This is not optimal. This is not perfect. This is just meeting U.S. dietary guidelines. This is the percentage of adults and children meeting the guidelines for fruits, and this is including juices. We're being generous. Vegetables, not much in the way of juices, but it's including juices. Whole grains, fish, shellfish, nuts, seeds, and beans, sodium, which should be, of course, low, and sugar-sweetened beverages, which should be low. An incredibly low number of Americans are just sort of eating food, right? And so this is the problem. This is the problem with our current health system in the United States. So I just want to end with, you know, is saturated fat a risk factor? Well, in exchange for poly, it does seem, polyunsaturated fat, it does seem to be, but I think there's enough evidence that you could probably exchange the poly for carb and get the same benefit. So is it a useful thing to focus on? I would say no. I think it's confusing and impractical. And why is that? I think if you focus on saturated fat, or even if it's in the top five, you know, of things that you mention to a patient, it results in sort of illogical and poor dietary decisions. So on this side of the slide are all foods that are very, very low or even have zero saturated fat, right? You can get a turkey hot dog. You know, this is summer fruit, light summer fruit, Cozy Shack chocolate pudding, and Subway sandwich. And I actually had to look really hard to find a picture of a real Subway sandwich on the web, because they're all Subway sandwich pictures, right, which look incredible and have all this lettuce and all this tomatoes. And right, this is actually a real Subway sandwich that somebody put on their blog for. And this is just bread, processed meat, and processed cheese, right? And then these foods all have saturated fat, right? Nuts, avocado, dark chocolate. And these we know from, you know, lots of studies are very likely good for cardiovascular disease. So I think it just sort of it confuses people to talk about saturated fat as a metric. And it distracts from what's truly important. So thanks for your attention, and I'm happy to take some questions.
I'd like to thank Dr. Mozafarian for probably the most comprehensive and convincing analysis of the relationship between fatty acids and risk of heart disease and other diseases that I've heard, anyway. We're opening up for a couple of questions.
If LDL as a biomarker is not a good predictor of cardiovascular disease, then how do statins create such decrease in morbidity and mortality?
So the question was, you know, how do statins fit into LDL not being a good biomarker? So you do you know the average reduction in cardiovascular disease with high-dose statin therapy? It's about 30%. Okay, so it's not unimportant. That's a pretty big effect, but it's actually not any different and probably smaller than sort of overall dietary patterns. Still 70% of events occur. So certainly, you know, statins reduce heart disease risk, but they don't eliminate it, as we're sort of marketed to believe. And I think you're probably also familiar with the pleiotropic effects of statins that have received a lot of attention. So statins prevent stroke, and stroke lipids are not a risk factor for stroke. LDL cholesterol is not a risk factor for stroke, and statins prevent stroke. Statins consistently are anti-inflammatory, and so that seems to be an issue too. And so I don't think that LDL is not a useful biomarker. I think that it's one biomarker. And so you need to look at the effect of any intervention on multiple biomarkers and then ultimately on events. And so I think that we have evidence from other, you know, drugs like Zetia, right, where LDL has gone down, but atherosclerosis progression, at least in two trials, has gone up or stayed the same. So LDL in those trials was not very effective for at least predicting atherosclerosis progression. So I think that LDL is a biomarker that's relevant for heart disease risk, but it can't be used in isolation. And I think statins are a great example of how if you just predict the benefit of statins from LDL, you only predict about a third of what they actually do. So they clearly are doing other things besides affecting LDL cholesterol. And they don't seem to be doing harmful things to counteract their reduction in LDL, whereas I think lowering fat intake lowers LDL but does harmful things. It raises your insulin, your postprandial triglycerides, it drops your HDL, it raises your systemic inflammation, probably leads to more weight gain over time. So I think that it's LDL is one important risk factor among many.
I don't know if I'm confused, but in most presentations of it's monounsaturated fat, and you talk about the risk of this. But when you do the analysis and you look at a diet and they do these meta-analyses, do they go through the diet and take out the fatty acid? Are you really talking about monounsaturated fatty acids?
Well, so you know, monounsaturated is almost all 18-1 and 9. So in that case, it's almost all 18-1 is. But it's total monos in the diet, estimated from a questionnaire, and then adjusting for everything else you could think of that could be a confounder, like fiber and other things in the diet.
But it's not the olive oil as a percent of the diet.
Well, so no, that, as I said, then they've also been analyses where vegetable sources of monos have been separated from animal sources, and vegetable sources are consistently associated with benefit. Animal sources are not.
Since it's
the same mono, you know, that sort of concerns me because the molecule was the same.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it gets to your point of what they're coming with, but all of these studies are adjusted for polys.
Yeah. You know. No, my point is that when we do our studies, and I showed you those curves and the, everything in our animals, we take the whole fat. And we extract it, and we do the fatty acid analysis on the whole fat. And I guess from your questionnaires, you're actually seeing what people eat. And does the computer adjust for how many monos there are in beef fat and how many 16 O's there are in beef fat? And it spits out all that, and it goes into a fatty acid distribution for the diet that they're eating?
Exactly. So the questionnaire estimates each individual fatty acid and then sums them together. And that's done with lots of error. And so that's why it's really important to do it prospectively.
Yeah.
Because if you did it retrospectively, then the errors could actually be related to your outcome. But since it's prospective over time, the errors in your questionnaire aren't related to future risk of disease.
Well, I'm reassured then, because what you really were talking about were fatty acid relationships.
Yes. Well, fatty acids, all the saturated fat, was the combination of 12 through 18. But it's the individual fatty acids estimated from the questionnaire and then summed in the appropriate groups. Yeah.
There's a lot of significance, obviously, with LDLs. It's always, bandied about. From what limited understanding I have about it, it would be kind of insignificant, or not very conclusive, if you don't have further investigative studies into it, like whether it's oxidizing. You know, it was discussed a little bit today. Someone may mention the size, density. Small, dense versus wider, fluffier, I don't know, something like that. What do you find with the saturated fats possibly doing?
So I think that, so the question is, LDL, cholesterol, as a measure, is just the concentration of, actually, it's the estimated concentration. We don't often even measure it directly. And there's many other characteristics. So you could look at the number of particles, or you could count ApoBs. Right, you could look at the size of the particles. You could look at the oxidative state of the particles. But there's lots of different things that could be done, and all of those things have been done in experiments and in some human studies. For me, all of those things are sort of ways at investigating and considering biology for understanding hypotheses. It doesn't tell me anything about disease. So in the end, I'm pretty comfortable with the conclusions. The whys I think needs to be studied more. So I think the why, is it because saturated fat raises, so for example, omega-3 fats, long-chain omega-3 fats, do raise LDL a little bit, okay? But they raise LDL a little bit by increasing particle size, not increasing particle number, which you might predict would be good, but you might predict that. So I think there's definitely more to be understood in terms of particle size and number and oxidative state, but I think those are sort of to explain what we're seeing, not to make decisions about policy. But I think there's a lot of unanswered science here.
So
terms of mechanisms.
To further be able to, because it's difficult to, I think you need an ultracentrifuge, or maybe there's other mechanical instruments.
We usually use NMR, and nuclear magnetic resonance, the NMR technology sort of usually to get information about particle size. A lot of companies are pushing that.
That's not cost effective.
Right, it's not cost effective. Yeah, it's very. And a lot of companies are pushing it. There are a lot of because it makes a lot of money.